Iran's leader says some hostilities towards the Islamic Republic are due to the nature of its political system, which combines democracy, freedom, and religion. Thousands of Palestinians hold massive street rallies across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. Also ahead, North Korea test fires four strategic cruise missiles, saying they precisely hit their preset targets after flying 2,000 kilometers.
Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us.
Our top story this hour, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the main reason behind enmities towards the Islamic Republic is the nature of the system, which is a religious democracy. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Islamic Republic combines democracy, freedom, and religion. And this mix foils the designs by the leaders of liberal democracy to plunder global resources. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader hailed the huge turnout of people in nationwide demonstrations marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He said the annual event is a manifestation of the strong popular support for the Islamic Republic. Ayatollah Khamenei called for more efforts to boost hopes for the future among the people. He said Iran's adversaries are pulling out all the stops to strike despair into the hearts of the Iranian nation. Thousands of Palestinians have poured into the streets across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. The rallies came following an earlier call by the Palestinian resistance group, the Lion's Den. It urged the Palestinians to take to the streets to show the world that resistance is ready to give a rapid response to any Israeli aggression. Ismail Haniya, who heads the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement, issued a message lauding the massive street rallies. He said the people of Palestine and the resistance front will not allow anybody to stop the ongoing anti-Israeli uprising across the West Bank. Nearly a dozen Palestinians were killed and more than 100 injured in the Israeli forces' Wednesday raid on the city of Nablus. A 22-year-old Palestinian youth identified as Mohammed Jawabra also died early Friday. He succumbed to injuries suffered earlier on Thursday during an Israeli attack on Al Arub refugee camp in the city of Al Khalil. The European Union says it has temporarily eased sanctions on Syria to speed up aid deliveries following the country's devastating earthquake. The European Council said aid organizations will no longer need to seek permission from the bloc's members before sending supplies and services to Syria. The measure will last for 6 months and is taken in view of the humanitarian crisis in the country, which was exacerbated by the quake. The EU's measure followed widespread criticism that Western sanctions are impeding international efforts to assist quake-hit Syrians. The US also issued a temporary sanctions waiver for Syria following the quake. The massive earthquake killed over 42,000 people in Turkey and more than 3,000 in Syria. North Korea has test-fired four strategic cruise missiles towards the Sea of its eastern coast, also known as the Sea of Japan. According to North Korean media, the launch was aimed at demonstrating the country's ability to conduct a nuclear counterattack against hostile forces. Pyongyang said the four Husail Two missiles hit a preset target after traveling for 2,000 kilometers. The new missiles were not announced by South Korea or Japan, which usually reports Pyongyang's launches. North Korea has fired a number of missiles this week, including an ICBM on Saturday, which it called a warning to its enemies. The new missile launch came amid heightening tensions following joint drills by the US with South Korea and Japan. North Korea views such war games as rehearsals for invasion of its territory. The US and South Korea are ramping up military drills involving nuclear-capable strategic assets. The two states, however, are calling for North Korea to suspend its missile tests. While North Korea remains under sanctions, the US piles pressure on Pyongyang, sending bombers to fly over the region. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
The U.S. wasted no time scrambling jets in response to North Korea's recent long-range missile launch, deploying strategic assets capable of carrying nuclear bombs with South Korean fighter aircraft. At the United Nations, the U.S. placed responsibility for the tension on North Korea.
We echo the Council's consistent demand that the DPRK comply with its obligations under numerous UN Security Council resolutions, abandon its weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile program in a complete, verifiable, and irreversible manner, and engage constructively in diplomacy.
North Korea has steadily developed a nuclear deterrent in the face of expanding U.S. militarization of South Korea. China calls for dialogue.
On the Korean Peninsula issue, we adhere to pursuing in parallel the establishment of a peace mechanism and the denuclearization process of the peninsula, and address the legitimate concerns of all parties in a balanced manner, and maintain peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula.
The U.S. has agreed to frequently deploy nuclear-capable weapons to the region at South Korea's request. The U.S. and South Korea seem to have agreed to raise the tension on the Korean Peninsula in an attempt to somehow force North Korea into negotiations on arms control or denuclearization. This reverses the policy of the previous South Korean government that brought about a reduction in tension through engagement and dialogue.
Local analysts warn of potential conflict.
When North Korea does something, the South Korea-U.S. alliance reacts. And if the South Korea-U.S. alliance does something, North Korea reacts. And this vicious cycle continues. The stronger the deployment of U.S. strategic assets, the more fragile the peace on the Korean Peninsula, and the faster the arms race. And this risks creating a security dilemma and, more seriously, a war crisis.
More regional tension seems inevitable as South Korea seeks to celebrate the 70th anniversary of its alliance with the U.S. with ever larger war games. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The United Nations General Assembly has voted in favor of a resolution that demands Russia withdraw its troops from Ukraine. The resolution called for, quote, immediate and unconditional withdrawal of Russian forces, followed by a comprehensive and lasting peace. Over 140 members voted in favor of the resolution, while 7 opposed it. Over 30 member states, including China and India, abstained. Addressing the session, Iran's UN ambassador, Saeed Erevani, said all parties involved in the Ukraine war should abandon military ambitions and prioritize a diplomatic solution to achieve sustainable peace. The non-binding resolution was set forth by Germany. China has reiterated its preparedness to continue playing a constructive role in resolving the Ukraine crisis and paving the way for peace at an early date.
China's position on the Ukraine issue is consistent and clear. The sovereignty and territorial integrity of all countries should be respected. The purpose and principles of the UN Charter should be observed. The legitimate security concerns of all countries should be taken seriously. All efforts conducive to peaceful resolution of the crisis should be supported.
Addressing the UN General Assembly, Day further said the prolongation of the Ukraine conflict will only result in more suffering for ordinary people. He emphasized that there is ample proof that sending weapons to Ukraine only makes the prospect of reaching peace bleaker. His comments came days after the US and NATO accused Beijing of considering supplying arms to Moscow, and China has dismissed those allegations. The US and NATO have been warning China against sending weapons to Russia, while they have been providing Ukraine with tens of billions of dollars in arms and military aid since the beginning of the war a year ago. The German Chancellor has roundly turned down Ukraine's demand for fighter jets, saying arming Kiev with warplanes currently makes no sense. Olaf Scholz also expressed fear that the Ukraine conflict could turn into a very long-lasting war. He, however, added that Germany and the West would support Ukraine for as long as needed. Scholz claimed that Russian President Vladimir Putin would eventually have to understand that his war aims were unachievable. He also warned Ukraine against launching attacks on the Russian territory, saying it would not be clever for Kiev to use its weapons to mount such attacks. Germany has already agreed to send and allow other countries to send heavy battle tanks to Ukraine. However, deliveries have been slow because of donors' limited supplies. The country does not have the F-16 fighter jets that Ukraine has demanded. Elsewhere, a massive winter storm continues to pound northern parts of the United States, killing a firefighter and causing widespread power outages. Weather advisories have been issued for a broad swathe of the northern U.S. from Washington State to New England. Some 900,000 homes and businesses were left without power in the states of Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, New York, and Wisconsin. The extreme storm also caused the cancellation of more than 2,000 flights, while another 15,000 were delayed. In Minneapolis, the school system held remote classes for more than 29,000 pupils, while classes were canceled in North and South Dakota. Colorado, Michigan, and Wyoming. Experts say the growing frequency and intensity of such storms interspersed with extreme heat and dry spells are symptoms of climate change. A daughter of slain African-American civil rights activist Malcolm X says she intends to sue the FBI, the CIA, and New York City Police. Eliza Shabazz has accused various federal and state agencies of fraudulently concealing evidence, and she claims the evidence shows the agencies conspired to assassinate her father. Malcolm X was the iconic leader of the African American Muslims who was assassinated 58 years ago.
Malcolm X was the iconic leader of African American Muslims and a civil rights activist who was assassinated 58 years ago. The iconic leader was born in 1925 and was jailed for robbery in 1946. In prison, he was introduced to the Nation of Islam and became influenced by the teachings of his leader. He was assassinated at the age of 39 on the 21st of February 1965 by three men. Now, after 58 years, his daughter says federal agencies concealed evidence of his murder and she intends to sue the FBI, the CIA, New York City Police, and others for his death. Eliza Shabazz accused various federal and New York government agencies of fraudulently concealing evidence. She claimed the evidence shows the agency conspired to assassinate Malcolm X. Shabazz says she seeks $100 million in damages.
For years, our family has fought for the truth to come to light concerning his murder, and we'd like our father to receive the justice that he deserves. The truth about the circumstances leading to the death of our father is important, not only to his family, but to many followers, many admirers, many who look to him for guidance, for love. And it is our hope that litigation of this case will finally provide some unanswered questions. We want justice served for our father.
The slaying of the black leader has been the subject of speculation about the potential involvement of secret government agencies in his assassination. Back then, the FBI infiltrated black rights movements in a bid to dismantle them. Malcolm X was a lead spokesman for the Nation of Islam. The group advocated separatism for black Americans. Malcolm X later split from the organization and toned down some of his radical views.
Malcolm X was part of the civil rights movement in the United States in the 1960s. The movement aimed to rid the country of its widespread racial discriminations. But despite some successes over the past decades, the U.S. is still suffering from structural racism against minority groups, especially African Americans.
In the 1950s, the United States reckoned with its prevalent racism, and Malcolm X's assassination was a turning point back then. The civil rights movement, which was a campaign to abolish racial segregation, discrimination, and disenfranchisement throughout the United States, culminated in the 1960s. Various individuals and groups, most notably Martin Luther King, struggled to rid the United States of its institutional racism. But despite years of struggle and some success, structural racism is still rampant in the U.S. The median household income for black people is 37% less than that of white people. And black people are also less likely to benefit from home ownership, the engine of generational wealth in America. Black couples are also more than twice as likely as their white counterparts to be denied a mortgage or a home improvement loan. Furthermore, only about 5.7% of physicians in the U.S. identify as black or African American. This statistic does not reflect the communities they serve, as an estimated 12% of the U.S. population is black or African American. One reason for this disproportionate number is that black people have been historically excluded from medicine, and life expectancy has declined slightly for African Americans. A black child born today is likely to live up to 74.7 years, 4 years less than a white baby. And black people are more than twice as likely as white people to experience threats or uses of force during police encounters. They are also three times more likely to be jailed if arrested.
An end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Official statistics have revealed that all sectors of the EU's economy recorded a spike in defaults last year. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, the number of insolvencies among EU businesses surged to the highest level during the final 3 months of 2022 since records began in 2015, as the bloc teeters on the edge of a recession, a statistics agency Eurostat reported recently. Defaults jumped by 26.8% compared to the previous quarter, while levels of business registration decreased by 0.2% in the same period last year. Eurostat said the trend persisted throughout the year, adding that the number of bankruptcy declarations increased during all four quarters of 2022. The agency also noted that all areas of economic activity were affected. The report said, looking specifically at bankruptcies by activity, all sectors registered increases in the number of bankruptcies in the fourth quarter of 2022 compared with the previous quarter. The severe energy crunch and an ensuing cost of living crisis contributed to a surge of insolvencies across the EU. The sectors with the highest levels of defaults were transportation and storage, which saw a 72.2% surge, and accommodation and food services with a 39.4% rise. Education, health, and social activities saw a 29.5% increase. Compared with the pre-pandemic fourth quarter of 2019, the number of bankruptcy declarations in the last 3 months of 2022 was higher in the majority of sectors of the economy, according to Eurostat. Accommodation and food services were hit the hardest in the final 3 months of 2022 compared to the same period of 2019, with a 97.7% increase in insolvencies among EU businesses. Meanwhile, real earnings in Germany decreased by an average of 4.1% in 2022 compared with a year earlier, according to preliminary data from the statistics agency DStatist released recently. A drop in real earnings refers to a situation where wage increases are unable to keep up with rising inflation, thus reducing spending power. Last year was the third consecutive year in which real wages declined in Germany. The study wrote, noting that consumer prices jumped 7.9% last year. High inflation has led to the largest loss in real earnings for employees since the beginning of the time series in 2008. Meanwhile, nominal earnings in the country increased by only 3.4% on average in 2022. This figure takes into account the gross monthly earnings of employees, including extra payments, these studies explained. Europe's largest economy suffered from record inflation last year due to a surge in energy prices brought about by the drop in deliveries from Russia amid Ukraine-related sanctions. Issues with pipeline maintenance and then the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines further exacerbated the tight supplies. Last month, Economy Minister Robert Habeck said the German economy would avoid a sharp decline but is set to enter a technical recession. According to Bloomberg, the number of bankruptcies in Sweden also surged to the highest level in at least a decade in January, amid growing pressure on construction companies from an ongoing housing market crunch, Bloomberg reported recently. According to the media outlet citing credit reference agency UC, the number of bankruptcy filings rose to 622, marking a 47% increase from a year earlier. Sweden has been struggling with its worst housing price slump in three decades. The situation has contributed to a surge in defaults in construction sector, with 130 builders filing for bankruptcy last month. Home prices have reportedly fallen by 16% from a peak in the first quarter of last year, with economists projecting the slide to continue. According to Bloomberg, UC economist Johanna Blom said, during fall, we saw bankruptcies in consumer-facing businesses such as retail, hotels, and restaurants in Sweden. Now we see that the largest increase is happening in sectors that are closely connected to industry and longer-term investments. A severe slump in Sweden's real estate sector has damaged the Nordic region's largest economy. According to estimates from Sweden's National Board of Housing, new home construction will fall dramatically by 44% this year to 33,000. Meanwhile, a drop in construction could further weigh on economic activity, the report warned. The Swedish government announced at the end of 2022 that the country was entering a recession that would last until 2025. The nation's GDP is expected to fall by 0.7%, while unemployment is forecast to rise to 7.8% in 2023 and 8.2% in 2024.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and today on the eve of the auspicious birth anniversary of the Holy Prophet's younger grandson, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, we present you a thought-stimulating description about our eventual fate, that is, death. I advise you to adhere to God-wariness, warn you against the difficult days, and show you the signs of God. The feared, that is, death, is about to come, with its frightful arrival, drastic befalling, and horrible taste. It will lap your souls and impede you from acting. As long as you enjoy sound physique and enough time, take the initiative in acting, because you may suffer the sudden visit of death that takes you from the surface of the earth to its inside, from its highest point to the lowest, from its affability to its loneliness, from its ease and light to its gloom, and from its wideness to its narrowness, where the intimate friend cannot be visited, the ill cannot be called on, and the seeker of help cannot be aided.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, moderation in worshipping. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of moderation in worshipping in Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Quran, we find a verse in which Allah has said that وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. We have not created the men and jinn except to worship me. And this verse gives a meaning that we are only created to worship Allah, and that means that we should not go out to earn sustenance. We should not go out to socialize with the people, with the family, with the children, with parents, I don't know, with the neighbors, or we should not go out to learn things at the school, college, university, or the seminary. The only thing that we need to do is to worship. Now, this kind of concept is wrong. This meaning is wrong if someone takes this meaning from this verse. Whereas this verse means that, look, Allah has created us and He wants us to obey Him. Therefore, if I'm spending my life in His obedience, this is a kind of worshipping. For example, you know, when parents, we say we should not disobey our parents and we must respect our parents. If we do not perform anything which our parents dislikes, if we are not performing that, then whoever will see our lifestyle, they will say that these are the obedient children of the parents. The reason is that whatever we are performing at the home, it's in line with the teachings or the instructions given by the parent. Similarly, the instructions that are given by God, if we live our life according to those instructions, our whole life will become or will be spent in worshipping Allah, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of moderation in worshipping. The moderation in worshipping means that we must have a specific time for the worshipping. And even if we are talking about the vast concept of worshipping, that whatever we perform, it should be in line with the teachings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with the instructions of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It should be according to the teachings of the Quran. This is known as worshipping, and we can spend our whole life in worshipping Allah. On the other hand, we must have a specific time for worshipping, and this is also a necessity. For example, if I am performing something and it is out of my power which I have, therefore I should adopt a moderate way. For example, a person who wants to get the nearness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who wants to perform something which is accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he should organize his timings to perform such things. The worshipping, even the prayers that he's performing, it should not make him tired. For example, we have 5-time prayers. Other than that, in the specific nights, we have a couple of supplications that we read. But if someone says that I want to be awake the whole night, worshipping or praying, and then tomorrow I will go to the work, and during the day I will fast, I will not sleep at all. Now, this is something excessive. This is not a moderate way. The moderate way means that even when you're praying, when you're performing something, or when you're performing the mustahabbat, you should adopt a moderate way which keeps you fresh, which keeps you, you know, fresh in order to perform the rituals or the prayers. And until you are fresh, if you are performing the things with the quality, that is important, because quantity in worshipping is not important. Therefore, the things that are obligatory, they are obligatory. We must perform that. Other than that, the things which are known as mustahabbat, in that we must adopt a moderate way, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Democracy in History, Part 4.
Persia had survived the destructions wreaked by the Macedonians and was under the rule of the Sassanid Empire. They too used religion as an ideological factor against their enemies. Unlike what we see during the Achaemenid rule, a religious government ruled in the Sassanid period. Sassanid Persia had a central government with a state religion.
Hakhamanishian to dore integral mazhabi budan. Yani ma un dore taze dashan.
The Achaemenid period was the time of religious transit. The Mazdean religion was just beginning to take shape. The Mithraism, there were still remnants of older religions. The fact that no religion had become dominant had created a more open setting. But as the Sassanid came to power, they could create a powerful and somehow oppressive system that at the end of the day led to the conversion of the Iranians.
In Sassanid Persia, Zoroastrianism was compulsory all over Iran as the state religion. The conflict between the two great empires of that time had turned religious.
The Sassanid rulers were lucky because a priest called Nestorius was called an atheist by an Orthodox church in Byzantium. And he found refuge in Persia. And the Persian Christians started to follow him and fight against Rome. So they were not killed anymore because they believed that Rome was their enemy. They considered Byzantium their enemy. These intense wars began to weaken the Persian society, and some of the thinkers and the intellectuals of that time started to look for a solution. They were divided into two groups. The members of one group, like Mazdak and Mani, sought religious reforms, and the members of the second group sought a new prophet, like Salman. Salman finds Prophet Muhammad in Medina and becomes one of his followers.
It was no longer the ruling priorities and conflict of interests that turned Persia and Rome against each other. Christianity was put against Zoroastrianism, and a new era in the history of the world had started. Orientalists call this period the era of Eastern dictatorship, but that's a Western point of view. What history has remembered about that period is the skin of democracy in the West and dictatorship in the East. This is a part of a Western religious historiography that disqualifies anything that is pitted against Christianity. What is called Eastern dictatorship in Western texts is in fact the religious conflict between the Persian and Roman empires.
Ignoring the rights of the Easterners was something that existed in the West and Europe since long time ago. You can see in Greek works that many Greek authors do not mention many important parts of history or presented a disordered version of it.
This is a constant phenomenon in Europe, and you can see some traces of it during the Crusades. You can also see its traces before the time of the Roman Empire. It continues during the colonizing activities in the 17th and 18th centuries, and its peak in the 19th century. It turns into an official ideology in Europe so that they can occupy and plunder different countries and to practice slavery. One of the things that justify slavery is this backward attitude of the native people of other countries. Easterners have always had a dictator ruling them. They never had democracy. Power was always centralized. Their king was always a dictator.
The most important concept of democracy is the freedom of human beings, equal rights for humans to decide their own destiny in social, economic, cultural, and political affairs. We can find such a thing in ancient Persia, but we can see that in ancient Greece, which was the main claimant to such a concept.
Even when you look at Rome and Greece, the problem of power, slavery, social advantages, slave exploitation, arrogance, and dictatorship was more prominent in the West rather than the East.
There were almost no cases of deposition in Rome. Their rival organization, the Senate, which doesn't do much and is suppressed. There was just one incident at the very beginning, when there was no empire yet, when the Tsar was killed. Otherwise, it didn't do much. The emperors that were supposed to be deposed were killed, almost always by their own guards. I mean, there were no organizations to support and protect them. The kings died by conspiracies. In Persia, kings were deposed when they misbehaved or suffered a defeat in a war or were not very successful.
The story of Julius Caesar and his conflict with the Senate and Caesar's murder and the transfer of power to his deputies, which has been turned into a play, could not have been far from the truth.
Greece's democracy established the pillars of a kind of government in which people ruled people without divine approval. The main criterion for Athens' democracy was cutting people's relationship to the gods, rather than considering people's wishes. But Persia had a government connected to the heavens both in the Achaemenid and Sassanid periods. Kings needed the gods' approval in order to be able to rule over people. They also had to be fair so that people did not leave them. They had to build an army to protect their divine approving government against invaders. The Romans are considered the first Christian rulers. But they were in fact opportunistic rulers that used religious ideology to unite different nations in their empire against Persia. They were the first religious empires in the world. All these methods set the theoretical pillars of democracy in future.
Some thinkers like Plato and Aristotle, who had a different opinion, believed that systems such as democracy, dictatorship, the role of aristocrats, the role of capitalists, etc., were not self-sufficient and automatically cultivated their opposing systems inside themselves. It means this kind of democracy is ephemeral. It lasts for some time and then breeds another system inside itself.
Even in the new era period, in spite of the fact that people were supposedly involved in choosing their government, this public opinion is always inclined in favor of rich and powerful people, and it's power and wealth that defines public votes.
If we are supposed to give the reins of governance to a great number of people, by what criteria can these people choose the right way of thinking? The right way of thinking can be known by only one person. A person who is wise and intelligent. He's the one who can lead a society with his knowledge. A group of people have no criteria that can lead us to the truth. A government is supposed to prompt us into being a good society, to make us healthy and prosperous.
Can we really say that this system in the 5th century BC, known as the Greek democracy, was really a democracy?
Well, what can be the signs of democracy? Everyone having their own way of thinking or constantly living with the fear of losing his life, wealth, and other belongings.
In the Behistun inscription and Naqsh-e Rostam, Darius tells his children, if you want to live in peace in your country, keep an eye on the Persian people. By keeping an eye on people, he meant supporting and taking care of them.
Democracy underwent many ups and downs after that, and was interpreted in different ways. Even at certain points in time, it adopted the opposite of its original meaning. These changes were part of the concept of democracy since the beginning, since its Athenian days. At the time when Socrates gathered young people in the Athens Bazaar and encouraged them to doubt their gods, values, and themselves. But the Athenian democracy could not tolerate any doubts in its principles and sentenced Socrates to death. If democracy had let Socrates' voice be heard at that time, perhaps we would have a different world today.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to a new study, the U.S. is no longer the millionaire magnet it was before the COVID-19 pandemic. Net inflows of high net worth individuals plunged more than 80% last year compared with pre-COVID levels as more wealthy Americans moved abroad. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Bloomberg noted the U.S. is losing its allure as a residence for millionaires. The net inflow of high net worth individuals plunged more than 80% last year compared with pre-pandemic levels, fueled partly by wealthy Americans seeking new pastures abroad at an unprecedented rate, according to a report by London-based immigration consultant Helene and Partners. RT also had an eye on this issue, writing, America is no longer as tempting a place of residence for world's wealthy as it was before the COVID-19 pandemic. A newly released wealth report by London-based immigration consultancy Helene and Partners has found. According to the report, inflows of high net worth individuals to the country dropped more than 80% last year compared with pre-pandemic levels. The figure fell to just 1,500 millionaires in 2022, from up to 10,800 between 2013 and 2019. The report states that the country is losing its luster among migrating millionaires, and the American dream is now on life support. The report also noted that the countries where the newcomers originate have changed. While previously the majority of applicants for investment migration programs were from developing nations who had weak passports with limited visa-free access and low economic mobility, most of the current newcomers are now from developed countries. According to analysts, the rich are a bellwether for the health of an economy due to their ability to move around the globe freely, and this provides an early warning signal into future country trends. The firm's data shows that back in 2014, the U.S. had the largest net inflows of individuals whose wealth amounts to $1 million or more. However, in 2022, the country occupied only 6th place in this rating, falling behind Australia, Singapore, Canada, and Switzerland. The report stated, people are still coming, but there has been a big increase in people who are leaving. That is what Andrew Amoyles, head of research at New World Health, which assisted in compiling the report, stated. The report noted that a greater number of wealthy Americans have been moving abroad, seeking greener pastures abroad at an unprecedented rate, with some explaining their choice as due to concern over taxes or security. The firm also noted a shift within the country, with smaller cities gaining popularity among wealthy residents, while megapolises like Chicago and New York are seeing large outflows of millionaires. Despite those trends, the U.S. remains the biggest wealth market worth $65 trillion with 770 billionaires, 9,630 people worth $100 million or more, and 5.3 million high net worth individuals, Helene and Partners noted. It is followed by China with $21.7 trillion in private wealth. Also, Forbes noted, one way to tell if a place is doing well is population growth. A city or state that is growing must be doing something right, since people are choosing to move there. Similarly, a place that is shrinking must have some problems, since people feel they need to uproot their lives to achieve their goals. The latest U.S. migration data showed that many people are leaving blue states such as California and New York, as economic policies that deter work and stifle entrepreneurship are partly to blame. A recent blog post from the National Association of Retailers breaks down the U.S. migration data from the U.S. Census Bureau. Florida, Texas, and Carolinas, all red states that lean Republican, experienced the biggest influx of new domestic residents, people moving in from other places within the U.S., while New Jersey, Illinois, New York, and California, longtime blue states that lean Democrat, lost the most people. Florida was also the fastest growing state in 2022, while New York shrank the most. There are several reasons why some states grow faster than others. One is climate. Studies find that the people have been moving to places with milder winters and more sunshine for several decades now. Colder Midwestern and Northeastern states with harsh winters have an inherent disadvantage, which helps explain population loss in New York, Illinois, and similar places, Forbes stated.
The story of Saudi Arabia.
Part 1.
Saudi Arabia these days has made headlines in many parts of the world, from its domestic politics and relations with the U.S. to its ground and aerial attacks on Yemen. But one of these developments was very important and strange. Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was once the most trusted journalist of the royal family, went missing in a peculiar way. He entered the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, but never came out. After an hour, his fiancée, who was waiting outside, informed his colleagues at the Washington Post via social media. And after several days, Jamal Khashoggi grabbed the headlines across the world. The operation that was aimed at eliminating Khashoggi turned into the biggest scandal in Saudi history. But the point is that Saudi Arabia and Turkey have their stories connected to one another in a strange place, in Istanbul, or the ancient city of Constantinople, the capital city of the Ottoman Empire, which goes back to 100 years ago when the First World War ended, the Ottoman Empire collapsed and Saudi Arabia was born. Geographical maps have not remained unchanged. Today's borderlines between nations and regions have seen constant changes over the centuries. Some people have come, put a pen on the map, and changed the lines as they wished and thought it was better, placing people